Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock, Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diaspora, both objects of a global miasma that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists. The new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity. But they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
Music in the air and lots of love everywhere. So give me the night. Give me the night. Give me the night.
Welcome, welcome. This is your brother Kwasi Kraft. Here we are on Warriors Way Production, continuing the fight. We are very blessed. We have Dr. Deborah Lassiter here, and introduce her in a few minutes. One of the things that we're going to be talking about today, the problem of sex trafficking in 2021. You know, what is the driving force behind sex trafficking? Is it glamour, greed, or moral degradation in our society? Why are so many men and women working together to promote and protect the business? Now, who is protecting the victims? This will be the discussion on Warriors Way Production, continuing the fight. Again, we have guest Dr. Deborah Lassiter, and I will introduce her in a few minutes, but I'm going to first go with my ancestral profile. And it's kind of befitting that we use Sarah Sally Hemingway. She was born 1773, Virginia City, Charles City, and she passed in 1834. She was Thomas Jefferson's concubine, and so he's been with her since she was 9 years old. He fathered six children by her, two of which passed. So I'm just going to go, and when I say this and I talk about these things, I think about critical race theory, you know, things that they don't want you to know. I remember I was at an event a couple weeks ago, and a young man had mentioned about Thomas Jefferson. And Sally Hemingway, he said, "I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that." And, it's an older white male. But, again, they don't want to acknowledge, the horrible things that, we suffered and so forth. So, anyway, Thomas Jefferson, I'm saying sex trafficking. This is a 12-year-old Sally Hemingway. Just as his father-in-law had raped and sex trafficked her mother, Jefferson kept the child in a windowless cell. He repeatedly raped her for years, and he forced her to give birth to more than six children of rape. She could not consent because she was only 15. Actually, a little younger, but one of the sons was born when she was 16. But anyway, she could not consent. So when you teach American history, stop sugarcoating the brutality that brought us to this day. And, and there's DNA evidence. And you can look that up on PBS, Public Broadcasting Station, where relatives of Thomas Jefferson took the test to confirm that Sally Hemingway fathered several kids by Thomas Jefferson. So when you think about, they talk about founding fathers. When it comes down to us, the mindset that they have about us and the things that they do and have been getting away with, it really hasn't changed a whole lot. And so when I think about a 16-year-old Sally Hemingway when she had her son Madison, and she had wrote a book telling about what, the things that she went through. And the book was also confirmed by another Israel Gillip Jefferson, formerly enslaved at Monticello, corroborated Madison Hemings' claim in the same newspaper. And then, so he had put this out in 1883. But you got to understand, he was able to do those things because Thomas Jefferson's children, they look white. And so they could pass as white. And so they were able to do a lot of things. But Thomas Jefferson never acknowledged them to be his children because he did not want the controversial thing. He had children by his wife who had passed, and he was always fun and doing things with them. But he never did anything with the children with Sally Hemingway. But he did allow them to go free. And when we say go free, they listed them as runaways, but they did not pursue them. So, but Sally Hemingway, he never released her. And, you know, they talk about that relationship, you know, how this, you know, like there's some articles that, well, maybe she loved him, you know. Well, he kept her locked up basically in a dungeon, in, you know, in the basement. Again, he raped her. But, you know, they always want to put a little different twist on this to justify the wrong. And so, again, this is what we talk about when I say the critical race theory, you know, putting that information out there. Okay, we have Dr. Deborah Lassiter. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Hi. Could you tell me a little bit about you? I know you got you run some programs and so forth, so if you could just inform our listening audience things that you've been doing.
Okay, so... Well, I'm Dr. Debbie Lassiter, and I am the executive director and co-founder of an organization called Convergence Resource Center. Convergence has been open for 18 years, serving this community with women who have women that have the lived experience of human trafficking and justice-involved women, so women who've come in contact with the justice system at all levels, but also any woman recovering from trauma can come to us for assistance. And we will help her. I have a doctorate of divinity from the New Testament, St. Thomas Christian College in Jacksonville, Florida, but I am an associate minister at the New Testament Church of Milwaukee.
Oh, okay.
I'm also a member of the VOCA Advisory Committee, which is the Victims Office Against Crime, and that advisory committee kind of puts together gaps in services and ways, implementation plans of how the government should be funding these programs. I'm also part of the HCAS Steering Committee, which is the Healthcare Collaborative Against Sex Trafficking, where we're endeavoring to establish some standards of care for women coming out of human trafficking. Also, I'm a certified HeartMath coach and trainer. And HeartMath uses science-based technology to help people recover from trauma using their own bodies. I'm an Ending the Game trainer and one of only three trainers in the world. And that is a 10-week psychologically walking a person out of the commercial sex trade. And I'm also a radio host for Triumph Rising, which covers human trafficking.
Oh, wow.
Well, I just wanted to give you a little bit so you know that, you know, they know you didn't just drag me in off the street and say, here, talk
about
it.
Oh, no. Yeah,
well,
most definitely.
Yeah. So
I know I've had some dealings with sex trafficking. I used to be a police officer, and I remember I got hired in 1989. And I remember a girl had ran away. She was from Maguanago, and she was on 9th and Burleigh. So a white female. She was 14 years old, and she was out prostituting. And I remember when we talked to her, we interviewed her, and she was like, yeah, well, I like old men. And, you know, as, you know, me, when I'm thinking old man, I'm thinking somebody at least 60, 70 years old. You know, but again, we're dealing with a 14-year-old, so an old man in her books was somebody 30-plus years old. You know, so, but it was an interesting situation that those type of things go on. We, in law enforcement, you know, I was going to ask you, Do you deal with a lot of law enforcement people? Do you feel you get the support from them when you're dealing with issues of sex trafficking? Because a lot of times, a lot of cops, in general, they have the attitude that these people bring this problem onto themselves.
Well, I guess
so is that something that you went across?
First, I want to kind of address the 14-year-old involved in prostitution. Thankfully, today, the laws have changed, and people under the age of 18 cannot consent to be involved in the commercial trade. So, thankfully, that law has changed, so there's really no such thing as child prostitution in the state of Wisconsin, thank goodness. One of the things for law enforcement, it's just like anything else. You have some good ones and you have some ones that are not so good. So there are, in our experience, we've had great help from some law enforcement, and other law enforcement have been customers that just didn't pay.
Mm. When you say didn't pay, just the situation scenario, or is there a cost with services?
You asked me, is there a cost for commercial sex? By definition, there's a cost for it. So if a person is partaking and not paying, they're interchanging, they're having sexual relations with the girls, the women, the boys without paying because they are law enforcement. Now, that's not to say that all law enforcement does that, but many of the women have reported that. Women that we've worked with and women from other agencies have reported that experience. So, and even now there are even people that are involved in the corrections that have been taken to task, taken to court for having sexual relations with the people that they're supposed to be protecting. And
nice.
In our definition now today of sex trafficking, that would fall under that because it was in exchange for goods or them doing it and sharing them with other people. So I think if we want to talk about sex trafficking, it would be good if we had a little bit of a definition so that we all know what we're talking about, if you don't mind. For human trafficking and prostitution are not the same thing because human trafficking has to involve fraud, force, or coercion. Fraud, you understand, I lied to you. Force, you understand, because I inflicted physical pain on you. But coercion is tricky.
Right.
So if I have tricked you into believing that you wanted to do this, you are still being human trafficked. You are not just not being trafficked because you said out of your mouth, yes, I want to do this. If there's any kind of exchange for goods or any kind of benefit or anything that's coming not just directly to you or has to come through you to you through somebody else, that is usually going to be human trafficking. Prostitution can be a willful act. Now, moral people don't like to hear that, but there are people in this world who agree to be involved in prostitution because that's what they want to do. They're sex workers. They fight for the right to do it. So in order for us to make sure that we discuss it properly, we need to separate human trafficking from prostitution.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
So, yeah, we need to do that because if we don't do that, then we go down the wrong road when we're trying to talk about helping people and what is or isn't human trafficking.
Hmm. Wow. I tell you, that definition, I mean, it's pretty clear cut, if you're paying for it, you said coercion and, people being tricked, or forced,
Mm-hmm.
I know there was a case in Kenosha. There was a young lady, had been, sex trafficked by her estranged living boyfriend, and she ended up, I don't know if she killed him or I can't
remember.
Are you talking
about
she killed him or
Racine?
Oh, that might have been Racine. That might have been Racine.
Okay.
That might have been Racine. The attitude that people have, that people want to do this, they're victimless, and you know, and some people, you know, like you were talking about Wisconsin, you know, you can't give consent, you know, 14 years old. But do you find that, is that changing somewhat? Like if somebody's 16 years old, or, you know, I've had incidents where they did not want to pursue issues against people that were possibly being charged because the girl was 16, the young man, about the same age.
So they, but, because they were the same age, you're saying that no one wanted to prosecute the young man? Is that what you're saying?
Right, right.
Okay, so there's so many different things that can come into play in that kind of situation. And one of the things that we need to remember about traffickers is that they do kind of function under three different hats. Okay, so one of them is be a CEO trafficker. And one thing I like to say, and this, you're probably going to get like a lot of pushback from this, but I need to say it. Because it's our culture. In our culture, when you say pimp, nobody sees that as a bad thing because we go back to Ghost and the Mac, and those were cool guys, Superfly. Those were cool guys. Okay, and the girls were with them because they wanted to be with them. That was what our minds, that's what we believed at that time. When you talk about Miss Kitty on Gunsmoke, she was a pimp. When you look at what she did.
Right.
Right? Okay, so when we all of them, they were pimps. So when you walk into our culture and say pimp, nobody's alarmed. You have to separate it and call it human trafficking, that they're selling flesh against people's will. So if we can make those distinctions, that helps us be able to discuss it clearly. Now, for human traffickers, they kind of function in three different hats, and it's going to be really hard to get people to stop using those words because they use them so interchangeably. But a lot of the arguments you get saying people want to do this is because you've got that stuff confused. So traffickers function as a CEO trafficker, in which he convinces you that we are in business together. We're doing this because we want to do it and we're making money together. But it's always a lopsided proposition. You might be the one doing all the physical labor, and he's telling you we're doing this and we're in business together. You might get $50, but he's getting $5,000 or $6,000, okay? So you really not in business together, and this is used a lot in the high schools with the young ladies when they start out dancing in the clubs, you know, stripping. And the guys tell them, I'm your protection, we're in this together, when actuality that's not what's going on. It's usually a gateway. That stripping is a gateway into the trafficking. They think they're in business with somebody. Now, of course, you have the gorilla trafficker, and there's a whole lot of pushback right now about using the word gorilla. Well, if you spell it like guerrilla warfare, then you understand that you're not about an ape, but I still don't understand why you're confused unless you think you're a gorilla.
Right.
So if you don't think you're a gorilla, then you should understand that gorilla trafficker is the one that uses force. He's not trying to talk to you about anything. He's not trying to make a deal with you. He's going to use brute force on you. And then the last one, and this is the one that we see a lot and hear a lot about, especially in urban America, is the finesse or the Romeo trafficker. This trafficker is your boyfriend. We are in love. He will woo you for 2 to 3 years because one girl can make one trafficker upwards of $150,000 a year. So he can have 2 or 3 girls working for him and still take 5 years to woo you and everything is good. He's going to buy gifts for the family. He's going to take y'all on trips. Bills. He's going to buy cars. He's going to pay your rent, but one day he's going to need a favor. Okay? Now, in that instance that you're talking about, I'm not super familiar with it, but unless you were talking about the girl in Racine, or if there could have been one in Kenosha, I'm not sure. But okay, so the girl was 16, the boy was 16 or 17. More likely than not, he was functioning as the Romeo trafficker. So she believed that she was in love. Without a complainant, you know, like I know, they can't prosecute. Who they're prosecuting? So she probably would not testify against him or didn't object.
Right.
So it was kind of an uphill battle for them to bring him to any kind of justice when she was saying no crime occurred.
I tell you, I was, I'm sure you know Dana World Patterson.
Yes, I do. I know who she is.
Okay. Yeah, I went to a couple of the, I forget what she calls it, some events that I went to a couple of events, and I heard testimony from a young lady that was being sex trafficked. And it was just the thing that you were just talking about when you were saying that people sweetheart you. And so this girl, and you know, and she was 18 years old, and she was working at a restaurant, and this guy met her through drive-through, started talking to her, and, you know, and started taking her places, buying her things, just spending a lot of money on her. Long and short of it, he asked her to go on the trip. I believe they went to Vegas, and she had been missing for almost a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And she, the complaint there was that, you know, when somebody's 18, you know, they're not going to be searching all that hard for you because, you know, you're an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And when those things happen, and she gave testimony as to what happened, where they took her out, and he, just like you said, wanted a favor. And he had her in the room with several other people and told her she had to, you know, perform specific sex acts. And she didn't do that, and then they beat her. And
mm-hmm.
from that point on, you know, that's she was trapped in the situation for over a year. She
mm-hmm.
goes on to tell that one day, you know, because the first time he had beat her really bad because she didn't make enough money. And she was at the casino in, you know, in Vegas. And one day she decided that she's just going to fight her way out. And basically what they would do is when it's time to leave, they go in the vehicle. And it was a lot of girls that were also part of the team and the madam, so to speak, that would enforce punishment to you if you tried to get away or didn't do what you needed to do. And so as she was getting in the car, and they usually have the car, you know, where people can't see where they're going, you know, so that, you know, they don't know where they're coming from, so they can't tell anybody, hey, come get me, I'm at this location. Long and short of it, he indicated that she just started fighting. When she got in the car, she started fighting, and she fought her way out of the car, ran back into the casino, and ran to the security guard. And he allowed her to use a phone, and she made contact with her parents, and
mm-hmm.
she was returned back to Milwaukee. But, you know, that is just such a, you know, that's not an isolated situation. And when you were saying gorilla pimping, and I don't know if people understand that, because, you know, a lot of these places, you know, like these moms don't get it, whereas you drop your kid off at a beauty shop, you know, you might not, depending on the situation, I mean, because sex trafficking, I mean, it's just a billion-dollar business, and, you know, they just don't seem to have any remorse for the pain and trauma that they inflict on people. And then I also find it that, again, when I say whether it be law enforcement or anybody in general, and when I have talks with young men, and I'm like, do you want this going on with your daughter? You know,
well,
but
can
some
I just
people, like you said,
When you were talking about, you know, it is $150 billion a year business at
mm-hmm.
estimate, 150. But when we start talking about trying to get a trafficker to understand that this is causing pain to people, shaming them, it has been proven, that doesn't work. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
work for us to say to them, this could be your daughter, because for some families, this is the family business.
Right.
The girls were raised to be trafficked, and the boys were raised to traffic them. So they don't, those kinds of things don't flinch. That doesn't bother them. And plus, they've shown that 70 to 80% of the male, because there can be female traffickers as well,
right.
70 to 80% of the traffickers were abused themselves as children or come out of trafficking themselves. A lot of the children, like a trafficker and his bottom, which is like his bottom, the girl, not the girl he trusts the most, but the one he trusts the most to do what he says, which is different.
Right.
Okay. It's because it's self-preservation most of the time. A lot of them have children, and their children
right.
raised to be traffickers. If they're girls, they're raised to be trafficked. So when we try to apply what, if you will, natural logic to them not wanting to be involved in it or to them being a bad thing, it's, you got to use something else. You have to get to the psychological reasons as to why this is happening and what we have been taught and what we've been raised to believe in relation to this.
Wow. About all the things that's going on. And when I say there's a lot of people, and like when I'm having conversations with other men, you know, you want to change the narrative, how they look at women. And that just seems to be a difficult thing for some people. I mean, at some point, I mean, you have a program. I know you're trained to build self-confidence in these, I mean, because what is the recidivism rate as far as them going back if you get them out of a sex trafficking scenario?
Well, actually, we have a program called HEMAD where we've had so far since November 65,000 men take a stand against human trafficking. So men are not – men, you know, there are a lot of men who don't think this is a good idea, you know, but there are some
right.
that do. So those men are standing up, and we appreciate that. As far as building self-esteem and things like that with the women, you know, it goes way deeper than that. We go deep into the psyche to help them understand what happened here because statistics say they're going to return 7 to 15 times. But the reason for that, the reason behind that is psychological. There's a trauma bond built and established between the trafficker and his victim. And even though that she will run away, she'll go back willingly because she doesn't understand that he's gotten into her psyche. And so, like, he's taught her that this world that we live in, where you get up and you go to work and you do this, that's the vanilla world. We don't really live like that. And what doesn't help is when she does come back, we don't understand what happened to her, so we do all the things he said we were going to do, which makes her believe him and not believe us. And so we have to be, people have to be trained, and that's one of my pet peeves, if you will, in dealing with human trafficking. You got a lot of people, just because government money came down the pike, they put out their shingle and said, hey, I serve as human trafficking survivors, but they've had no training. So they really
right.
don't know when they're re-victimizing, and they really don't know when they're pushing back out there to the trafficker. This 10-week psychologically walking out of the commercial sex trade is very intense because if a person has a trauma bond with another person, the more you say against him, the more you're pushing her to him. And so we had, I had a lady once who we were sitting talking, and she told me her trafficker had set her on fire. He thought it was funny.
Wow.
Periodically, and eventually he was caught by the police, and she was sitting there talking to me, and she said, Dr. Lee, I can ask you a question. I don't want you to feel bad of me. I said, what is it? She said, I need to go see him and make sure he's okay. Now, he was in jail.
Right.
But the thing is, most people would have been at that moment been like, you want to go see him? Are you crazy? That would have been the wrong thing to do. That was absolutely the wrong thing to do. So you have to know how to navigate through the psychological challenges that these people are facing in order to help them come out. Because if you don't, they're going back. And then because of economics, they'll go back. Even though it's not a good lifestyle, okay, but it's better than living on the street. It's better than
right.
not having a roof over my head tonight. If I got to sleep with four or five guys to make sure that I get to sleep in the bed and get some food tonight and can take a hot bath tonight, okay, I'm going to do that. That's what a lot of people are doing. We found women that hit their traffickers and turned around and went right back to them because they felt like that life was better than the life that they had to go back to. And the thing about it is there's so much. Like, we haven't even touched on child brides, which are legal in 25 states. Well, in 45
states, wow, yes.
In 45 states in the United States of America, you can marry a child, okay?
Yeah.
An adult can marry that child, or another child can marry that child. There are 23 girls married, 23 girls under the age of 18 married every minute. That's human trafficking. We haven't talked about that.
Wow.
Right? All right? You know, that's human trafficking. We haven't talked about labor trafficking because labor trafficking is human trafficking. And so, you know, it's like there's so much to it, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to jump all over the place and not, you know, allow you to ask the questions you want to ask, but there's just one other thing that I need everybody to understand about this situation is that human trafficking exists in all 72 counties of Wisconsin. It's not just in the inner city of Wisconsin. And it's African-American girls. Yes, it is African-American girls, but it's African-American and every other nationality, male and female, boys and men, girls and women being trafficked, even babies being trafficked in the commercial sex trade as well as the labor trade. So this thing is bigger than just any certain neighborhood. This is a people problem. And we have really got to view it like that and come at it like that so that everybody goes up against it and not just one set of people.
Mm. Well, I tell you, that is, you know, when you think about it, you said, I was looking at a video on labor trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 9-year-old young man and his parents, he and his brother, twins, They were out of Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Long and short of it, they belonged to some church group. And
uh-huh.
the church group was going to do some manhood training with them. And so they went somewhere in Michigan or somewhere where they had them working in a restaurant. And, I mean, they would just, you know, long hours, force them, beat them, do these different things. And this young man was there until he was about 17,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, it's just something that, you know, there's, like you said, there's so many layers of so many different things. And when you look at, you know, labor trafficking and then we have organ trafficking, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so many different things. But I guess I want to ask, you know, the difference when you look at, you know, commodity. I don't mean to say it in a negative way, but that's how some of these, they think, you know, because I can use this person over and over again versus if I smoke a joint or something, it's done, you know. But,
right.
you know, I get more money by, you know, using these women over and over again. And like you said, the psychological trauma and, you know, and the work that you're doing, you know, you said that's I didn't get. You said that was an extensive program that you put them in.
Well, of course, it's
as
expensive.
Far as
we don't charge the ladies anything. We don't charge any of our clients a dime.
Wow.
That's right. We help them. We don't charge them. Most of the time, they don't have any money anyway. But it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're open to help them. We're not. You know, human mm-hmm. trafficking survivors don't need excuses. They need help. Qualified
right.
help. And what they've gotten over the years are excuses, or they've been used and re-victimized by people that were supposed to be helping them. And you see that a lot. Unfortunately, even in court-ordered programs, we had a young lady, she came to our center, and she was crying and screaming so loud, they didn't want to open the door because they didn't know who it was. They couldn't see because she had her head down. And when they did open
right.
the door, she came in the center and just fell face first down on the ground screaming and crying. And so we finally got her to calm down to find out what was wrong with her. She said that she was in a court-ordered support group. You know, so this means that, like, my agent, the court has said, if I don't go to the support group, I'm going back to jail. Sitting in this support group, and the leader of the support group, the counselor, said, you, there's no such thing as human trafficking. You were just a prostitute.
Wow.
And then all of the other people in the group took turns berating her for being a prostitute. And one girl tried to help her, and they got on her. And so she left there terrified, completely upset, and came to us because she's like, I'm going to go back to jail because I can't go back there. And so that's re-victimization. And we do that a lot to people because we don't know any better. I guarantee you, if we would have told that counselor that what they did was wrong, they wouldn't even have understood what happened.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so it's, yeah, we need knowledge. We need training to be able to help people. But we also need to understand that typically they're not going to have money to pay you. They're not going to be able to pay to stay at your place. They're not going to be able to pay for your psychiatric help, but they still need it.
Now, have you found that during this pandemic that people are, you know, and I've heard this from other people, and I've actually witnessed some things. You have family members that lost their job, and they're just doing whatever makes sense to make them money. And that's one of the things that some people turn to. And I guess when you look at people that you train, are these people, a lot of these people, are they former people that were in the sex trade, or a combination of both? And do you find that to be a plus or a minus? You know, that, hey, this person really understands what I'm going through because she's been through it, versus somebody else that, you know, they have all the written knowledge and, you know, can tell me, you know, the psychological trauma and different levels of this and that I'm going through. Do you find a fight to try to work with some of these people in regards to validating yourself as somebody that understands what they're going through?
So before I answer that, I want to use this caveat. I firmly believe that everybody has a lane. We all have a lane that we're supposed to be in. And if you are in your lane, you're going to be most effective and be able to move forward and help people the best. The problem becomes when you step out of your lane to try to get in somebody else's lane and you're not prepared. So that said, there are people who've never been in the life who are excellent working with human trafficking survivors. There are people that have been in the life that could not work with a human trafficking survivor at all. There are ones that have been in the life that are excellent working with human trafficking survivors. What I will say is that a survivor is going to be your best option at working with other survivors, because even if they – but they have to be healed first. That's the thing. You got to help them heal first. You can't take them off the street and throw them out there and say, here, start helping folks. You know, we do that a lot. They barely stand up, and we put them up in front of people and say, here, talk. That's not how that works. You've got to help them heal first. And so our lead case manager at Convergence is actually a human trafficking survivor. Our front office lead administrator is a human trafficking survivor. We have survivors that are case managers. We have survivors that are ending the game facilitators. But we also have people that have never been in the life that are allies, and they work just as well. But when a person, we do have people that call the center and say, hey, I would like to talk to somebody that has been through what I'm going through, and we can accommodate. We can accommodate because we have people that have gone through it and that have lived the life. It's one of those things that there's so much to this, because we haven't even touched on involuntary organ donation, but that is also trafficking. But what the TIP report has established that during COVID-19, and we knew this already because we were seeing it, during COVID-19, human trafficking increased to dangerous levels, because what happens is you can do an in-call or an out-call, okay? An out-call is when the person that is performing the service or whatever is out, okay? An in-call is they're going in, okay? I'm sorry, I think I got that backwards. But in one instance, the person is coming to you at your house or wherever you're living, right? So what they found was people, because they couldn't get out and go to work, they had money and they were at home, they would keep women for 3-4 days, sometimes a week, torturing them and the level of cruelty. And so human trafficking, and then, of course, just like you said, families got their backs up against the wall, and they did things. Like, they slept with their landlords. Some landlords demanded it. Sex, you can't pay your rent. You're going to have sex with me and my friends. That's human trafficking, okay? But then you also have where families in this country as well as out sold their children. Sell the youngest one so we can feed the rest of them.
Right.
And that was going on. It's still going on in the United States.
I know when we did some sting operations. When I was on the police department. Actually, we did some sting operations when I was on the police department, and we did one specifically for, you know, sex trafficking, where we would find a hotel and just be on the internet, and people would just give us a call, and you know, and they would show up. I remember one time we had a lady. She went and she had some stranger. Why she went to meet with the officer that was undercover to so supposedly perform a sexual act, but she had her two kids in the car, and uh-huh. she met a stranger before she went inside and asked that stranger to go pick them up some food down the street. She gave that person some money, and you know, just the risk that people take, you know, with these kids and the things that they do. And so I see, you know, what police do, you know, they arrest people for doing something, and, you know, so, but once they get arrested, I mean, are you having contact with these people? Are they trying to get these people some help in these situations?
In some instances, we've assisted law enforcement because the mindset that we're hoping will take hold among all law enforcement is that when you make an arrest of this type, that services are offered before jail, you know, because, excuse me, a lot of times what they need is help. They're in a situation, and they're trying to get out of it. We've had situations where the person is with the law enforcement and with the trafficker, probably beaten beyond recognition, and in some instances, the person is released back to the trafficker. But because there are not a lot of resources in place, we have a gap in resources. We can't keep up because if you look at the number of people that are trafficked, it's in the millions. The number of people that are trafficked a year, we don't have enough services. There are more and more services, more qualified services opening every day, but we don't have enough services. One of the biggest problems is housing. We don't have enough housing. People that have been trafficked, just like people coming out of incarceration, they want to reestablish themselves. So they don't want to move to a facility where you got six or seven other people. They want to move into their own apartment or their own house with them and their children because they now want to be mama again. And so we have to look at the whole picture. We have to look at how did this person get where they are, and that's what trauma-informed care is all about. And so that is what my staff is trained to do, to provide trauma-informed care, to listen to what is actually being said and what isn't being said, to see what is being done and what isn't being done, so that we're able to help people. And I think that one of our problems is that we're still so confused about what we're dealing with. We're still so confused about how people got there. You still got people saying, and you mentioned it earlier yourself, they in this because they want to be. If you understood what this you would know that I don't think there's a person alive that wants to be trafficked. If you really understand what you're saying, and you're talking about people, and I'm going to be honest with you about this because women have told me this. When you take an African American woman up north to be trafficked, there are certain men that will request an African American woman. When they request her, it is worse than slavery, babe. Do things to her that they will. And there was one girl, she was very light-skinned and she could pass. And she told us, she said, you know what? I'm so glad they never figured out I was black. Because what they did to that black girl. And we've had other ones, they've made them sleep with animals. They keep them in cages.
Wow. Oh, my God.
We need to understand what we're doing as we re-victimize our own people. Because, yes, there are a lot of African-American men that are traffickers. But they're not they're not the only ones. That's right. They're not the only ones. But they're active in it, and they shouldn't be.
You know, when you talked about with animals, when I first started, we had a case where we had women that were sleeping with Dobermans. And having sex with Dobermans, and they had the video, and I can't, and I think, you know, that's a hard charge because how do you, you know, bestiality? I mean, you, I don't know how you, you know, I mean, is the dog complaining? You know, I you know,
I don't know how what?
Yeah, but
they do it or they, what?
They were how do you, how do you charge that? how they charge you. I mean, these were adult women.
Is bestiality illegal?
Well, you know what? I can't remember. You know, I'm just thinking about the incident, and I don't remember that we charged anybody.
Let's take it back a step further, though. Why were they doing
okay.
it? Was it part of a trafficking ring, and they were so doped up they didn't know what they were doing?
Right. Yes.
You got to take it a step. You got to look. You got to get back to the roots. A lot of this is happening because these women are being trafficked, and traffickers. Human trafficking is a supply and demand business. Okay.
Mm.
The only way
yes.
we got trafficking is because there's a demand for it, and the demand is getting worse and worse. And the what they want and what they want to do to people. And I'll tell you, right now, as far as I know, I believe that snuff films are still active out there. You know, we're not talking about them as much. But I believe it's because one of the things that's really on the rise is strangulation. And they're strangling people, reviving them, strangling them again and reviving them.
Right.
They're able to strangle people. And this is part of human trafficking. And that's why I say when we start talking about human trafficking, we really need to talk about human trafficking and not get it tied up with something else. Because there's nobody, there's not a person alive that's going to convince me that somebody's out there saying, hey, I want to be trafficked.
Right.
That's not happening. Because at the root of all of this, it's when they're trafficked, somebody's getting paid, and it's not them.
Right. Boy, I tell you, that is a very heartbreaking situation. And, you know, I had a young lady that I, you know, I do a lot of personal training. And I met a young lady that wanted to learn self-defense. But she also informed me, and she was living downtown in a really nice area. And she said there was some sex trafficking going on in the apartment next to her. And she could hear, you know, this girl screaming and, you know, and a bunch of people going in. And so I went over there to listen, and I could hear it. And then she also called MPD. They came over. They also went to, there was a young lady there, but, you know, they just didn't do, I don't believe they did their due diligence. Long and short of it, the young lady, they got upset because she had informed the police on them, and so she was worried that they were going to snatch her up. You know, she wanted to leave the apartment, so she called me up. Me and my wife were getting ready to go out, and then she gave me a call, and she said, could you come help me get out of my apartment? And I said, no problem. And my wife was very accommodating and stuff like that. But, you know, there's so many different things going on throughout the city. We try to do as much as we can to help people. And it's just so many levels of it. Like
I got a crazy question for you. How did they know she called?
She would knock on the door. I mean, knock on the wall sometimes to make them stop, you know. And the police, they don't always are very I think they kind of revealed in a manner that it was that
person. Of course
person.
They
and
did.
There,
that's what I'm trying to get to. When you call the police and say it's anonymous, it needs to remain anonymous.
Right.
Remain anonymous. We don't have, it's TV to say that there's victim witness protection out there. Because when these girls testify against their traffickers, there's no victim witness protection. There's no money for it. So so even these girls, like girls who were being victimized by police, by people in authority, they were terrified. Because they said, if I call, if I tell, they're going to know I told.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Most
and so we're always, you know, oh, these people should do this, oh, these people should do that. Everybody needs to do something. Human trafficking didn't get here by itself. It got here because we as a community, we as a people, we as a society turned our heads when we saw stuff that we knew was wrong. And so now it's gotten to this place. You know, you think about it. When you were younger, you'd see some guy with a bunch of women, nobody said a word. Oh, he's a player.
Right.
He got it going on.
Right.
His son got beat up by her boyfriend or whatever. Oh, man, look at that. That's bad. But we didn't do anything. So it gained the power. It got stronger and stronger. And now it's almost second nature. You see a woman getting beat up, people pull out their cameras and put it on YouTube. They did it over in Chicago.
Yeah, exactly.
Her trafficker in the middle of a busy street. Cars were blowing so they could go around, and he was standing there saying, take it like a real beat. And the rest of the traffickers were standing around throwing money on the ground while he was beating her up. But we put that up on YouTube. So, you know,
right.
We're fuss about the traffickers, and we're going to fuss about the people that's doing that, but that's just as wrong.
Well, we're getting ready to go to our top of the hour break. And then when we come back, we're going to open the lines up for questions and comments. So we are listening to Warriors Way Production, continuing the fight, and be going to break.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
All right. We are back, and we're going to now open up the line for some questions or comments. And I see, 9139. Questions or comments, or are you just listening?
Hello, Brother Kwasi.
Hey, how's it going, Sister DD? How you doing?
It's going all right. It's going all right. And I would like to say hello to your guest, my longtime friend, Miss Debbie Lassiter.
Who is that?
This is Miss Dee Dee, Debbie. Who are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, my sister. I'm fine. Good to hear your voice. What a very, very good podcast tonight, Brother Kwasi. And me and Miss Debbie go way back. Oh, my God.
Oh,
I just
nice.
You know what? You really chose an awesome, awesome guest tonight. And, oh, my God, I mean awesome. I just can't. If I had 1,000 tongues, I just couldn't say enough.
Yes.
Just a wonderful, wonderful woman. A wonderful, wonderful person. I could love her like
a
sister. Yes. We haven't talked in a while. That doesn't mean that she's not still in my heart. And Debbie, don't charge it to my heart. Charge it to my mind, my sister.
Oh, not at all. No problem.
Oh, my God. It was so awesome to hear your voice. And what an awesome program. Very, very interesting. I wish I could have had my older granddaughter listening. You can't try to tell these young girls, these young women enough. At least try to talk to them, not hard dream and preach to them, but just try to talk to them and meet them kind of like where they at, as Debbie said. You know, not run them off and say, to keep them again, but just try to talk to them. Because a lot of times, they be like, oh, well, that happened back in your day. I don't want to hear that. It might have been back in my day, but it's not as bad as it is in your day.
Right.
It's gotten a little rough. And somebody tried to tell us, just like we're trying to talk to you. That's because they've been there, done that.
So kind of like
know where you're headed. And just maybe trying to save you from a little harm.
Yeah.
Very good show. Very good.
All right.
And
well, thank you, Sister Dee Dee.
You're very welcome, brother.
You're yours, too. Thank you.
Very well.
Okay, let me go to our next caller at 4969. Caller, question or comments, or are you just listening? Hello, caller, question or comments, or are you just listening? Okay, well, let me come back to you. Two eight one five. Caller, question or comments, or are you just listening?
I'm just listening, but it was very, very, very good and eye-opening to hear everything this evening. And Dr. Debbie is amazing, so she really helps put things into perspective. And so I always like listening. So thank you, Dr. Debbie.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Well, you know, I thinking about everything going on, and I was looking at and I was wondering, you had made a comment.
What you gonna feed him?
About
when you wake up, you won't be hungry.
Let me get some a phone. I think I'm getting some. Okay, and okay. I was thinking about something. Dr. Debbie Lassiter, do you know Jermaine Reed? He used to be the radio personality on WNOV, but I used to work for him at Ujima House.
I know who he is,
Yes. And I was just, wondering. I remember a situation where he rescued a kid that was staying up north. And, you know, I noticed it, you know, like even when I was a police officer in the city of Cudahy, and I would see these white families, you know, adopt these black kids, and you see the black male or female, their hair is real matted. And like you said, there's some abuse going on. And, you know, but the lack of support from social services, because, you know, it's like a mentality sometimes that they're better off because they're with somebody white. I mean, so do you find racism, you know, a big obstacle that you may have to come over, get over at different times in regards to how people are looked upon? Just like when we talk about the Capitol, you know, the extreme indifference, you know, where it's a lot of these people, they're getting, you know, where an officer died. Actually, four officers that was part of that eruption at the Capitol January 6th committed suicide. And those officers were people that, you know, just kind of moved out of the way and let people move on and stuff like that. And so you find a lot of people that are, and you know, and I'm making that point, just saying that, you know, the lack of the extreme indifference when you deal with a specific people with situations and stuff like that. Do you find that, you know, with people of color, you know, in these situations, you know, because I see, you know, these kids and, you know, they just seem to be, you know, low self-esteem, and those are target issues where people go after you and stuff like that. And so, you know, you got, you know, what do they do? Head and shoulders, you know, on our hair and stuff. Like I said, it gets matted, padded, and stuff like that. And these kids don't feel good about themselves. And, you know, these traffickers, you know, they profile their targets. You know, so, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, like I said, is there a racial issue, you think, at different times and situations, you know, when you go place to place? Because I know that one time he had got a kid that was up north that was being abused, but they kind of took their time about, you know, looking into it. You know, so do you find cases sometimes where, you know, they should have did something sooner than later, but for whatever reason, and you believe that maybe it was something, you know, racial?
Isn't that the reality in the world?
Yeah, most definitely.
I mean,
but again,
I mean, it's not going to be
like,
any
people
different.
Don't like to call it what it is.
It's not going to be any different in the human trafficking world than it is in the real world,
right.
I mean, the rest of the world. So, you know, that exists in our world, in every facet in every area of our world. So it's not going to be different because it's human trafficking. It's going to be the same.
Right.
So that's not anything that's unique to the trafficking world. So we can't, you know, I mean, of course the answer is yes, because it's yes for the rest of the world. Does that make sense?
Right.
You know, it's not going to be different, you know.
Hmm. Now, if people need the, oh, I was going to ask, do you work like a co-ed group, you know, with men and women when you talk to some of these people? Oh,
no.
Okay.
You know, so women, well, we are very sensitive to our clients. We are client-driven.
Okay.
So we've discussed it with our clients. Do you want to be, because our agency, our clientele are adult female, okay?
Okay.
Adult born female. So our we don't have groups where there are men and women in, because there are no men at our agency. But
right.
We've asked them about men being in groups with them or whatever, and they don't want to be in groups with men, and that's their right.
Okay.
Because, you know, for a long time, their rights were overlooked. And so they have a say in what happens at Convergence, and they don't want to be in co-ed groups. Many times because they were so, like, a lot of our ladies, the first time they saw or were around men that were positive was at Convergence. So they don't, there's still trust. There's some women they don't want to be in groups with, you know, and so we don't put those same women. Like, if there's a woman that was a bottom, she has to be, you know, we typically won't put her in a group with other women. We'll do her separately,
right.
Because so often they're still in recruitment mode. Even though they're at an agency,
right.
Like they're recruiting even at the even in the shelters. The bottoms will go into the shelters and pretend to be homeless so that they could meet them in there and take them to the trafficker. So you have to be careful who you put in certain groups with and same, you know, same situations with, because you could be reharming the very people that you're trying to help. So we don't have co-ed groups, no.
Mm. You know, I'm glad you said what you said, because I remember an incident. I had met a lady that was homeless, and I got her some a meal in George Webb, and then my boss has asked me to take her to the rescue mission. And when I told her I was taking it, she just went nuts. She did not want to go. She said she was right there. You know, she'd rather be out on the streets. And, you know, so we ended up working something out where we got her into a hotel. We had a contract with some of the hotels in our area and stuff like that. But, you know, that is a common situation, and a lot of people don't know. And not my brother, I don't know if you know my brother, Olu? Olushagan? Olushagan? Did you watch
I don't think I do.
Okay. But anyway, he was a police officer for maybe 4 years with MPD. But one of the things that he did and still does, he'll sleep in a lot of the homeless shelters, you know, just to provide protection for some of these people.
Yeah.
And because, like I said, a lot of people don't realize what goes on, and then you don't really have qualified people to deal with those situations of people being taken advantage of, you know. And
no,
so you wonder why. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I, you know, and it's not a, I don't want to call it a criticism, but just something that all of us need to keep in mind, is that we're all just people. You know,
right.
There really isn't a us and them when we're dealing with people that have been trafficked, because it's just, most of us were just one question away or one incident away or one person away or one street away from being caught up in this world ourselves. There are people who were working their jobs every day, because people want to tell you, oh, the snatch and grab doesn't exist. Absolutely it does.
Right.
It is still happening. And people that are very strong-willed are still fighting and get caught up in human trafficking. But one myth is that traffickers are out there looking for people that are disadvantaged so they can get them. No, traffickers want people that are compliant. They want people that they're not going to have to argue with. They want people
okay.
that are going to do what they say. And a lot of times, that's going to be your straight-A student. We were just talking to a girl. She was a straight-A student. She was working after school at a fast food restaurant. She was headed for college. That's who the trafficker wanted.
Right.
And he didn't do it in a way of, I'm going to snatch you off the street. He was a Romeo trafficker. And so we have to get out of our mind this picture of what we think a trafficked victim looks like, because it could be any one of us. And here's the other thing. People need to remember that because it's a supply and demand business, all of us are somebody's type. So whatever the trafficker, like we have one of the eldest woman we ever helped rescue from the commercial sex trade was 74 years old. Because her her trafficker's clients wanted the experience of having sex with their grandma. So, you know, we have to, this picture, that's why I say we gotta broaden our scope and understand that this is a key problem, and it has to be addressed that way, globally, right, regionally, nationally. Yes, it's hitting our community, but it's also hitting the Asian community. And no, people didn't pay attention to it until it landed on suburban America's doorstep, just like everything else.
Right.
They didn't really pay attention until it landed on their doorstep. And then they wanted to say it was only African American men doing it to them. But then they found out that that wasn't true. Right?
Right.
It's all of us.
Yeah.
We have to remember it is all of us, and we have to fight it tooth and nail for all of us.
And, you know, I know that they had made a bust out in Mequon at some of the salons and stuff, and those were the Asian women. And so there was, and that goes on pretty much a lot at some of these salons. So it's, you know, like you said, you know, if people have to open their eyes, and, you know, you have people that just don't want to believe certain things are happening. You
right.
know, they, so if, you know, it's a tough issue, but, you know, we do what we can to help people. And, I always say, you know, the best way to, you know, if you're not feeling good and you're feeling down, the best way is helping somebody else to kind of lift your spirits. And, you know, those are things that, you know, I try to do. I was with some friends of mine, and we were on MLK, and I saw a young lady, and she was, and the friends of mine, they were retired police officers, and so they saw the young lady. She was, you know, she had shorts on, and you know, dressed in the way she's trying to attract people, and I'm standing, and one of the things that I always try to do is acknowledge people. I don't want people to think that I don't see them, you know, and if I get a chance to help them, this is what I'm going to do. And so I got actually three. One guy is a former almost assistant chief, and then, you know, one's a sergeant, one's a, you know, so they know what they're looking at. They had nothing to say to this young lady. You know, they're standing, we're talking, and they're acting like she's not even there. And I looked at her, and I said, "Ma'am, hey, how you doing?" And told her who I was, and I said, "Look, I had $20. I said, I just want you to get you something to eat, and be safe out here. I don't want you to get hurt, okay?" And she said, "Thank you," and then she walked away, and then she turned back, and she told me her name. And then she said, "Okay, but that's my street name, but here's my real name." And, you know, I would like to bump into her again when I'm in another situation where I got a little more change, because I know that she's probably got some kids somewhere, staying somewhere, and I would like to, you know, find out where that is and just bring them some food and this and that. And, you know, that's – but, again, when you acknowledge people, because there's a lot of people that are out there that are just working for themselves. They're not necessarily working or being pimps. But like you said, there are some situations where, you know, they need money, they need food. And,
yeah, one of the things,
you know,
that we
the life circumstances change.
One of the things we do during the Super Bowl is reach out to those women. We reach out, we do rescues on the ground at the Super Bowl. And we reach out to those women. And a lot of those women will tell you, I'm doing this because I need to survive. But if you go to the backstory, they didn't start out doing it because they needed to survive. They started out in traffic, which still makes them a victim. And so, you know, even though it might look like I'm doing this, and then you have ones that say, I make good money, I want to keep doing this. But then as you continue to talk to them, I met a young lady, she was like, oh, I'm doing good. I don't need any help. I'm okay because I'm supporting me and my son just like this, and everything is all right. But as I talked to her more, it came out that she actually was trafficked when she was 12 years old, from 12 to 20. And at 22, the trafficker got arrested, and she was still out here. So that's what she knew how to do, so she kept doing it. So somebody coming in on the back end of her story would hear her say that and say, oh, she's out here because she wants to be. No, she's not. She's that 12-year-old girl that was victimized.
Right.
You know, and so we have to remember to look all the way back. But one thing I wanted to talk about before I don't want us to run out of time before I get to this. In our neighborhoods, a lot of our neighborhoods, there are residential brothels. You come across those?
Yes.
Okay, so, and we don't know that they're there. We don't realize that they're residential brothels.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we don't realize it, we think it's just a bunch of kids hanging out, and they got girls over there all the time and guys over there all the time. A lot of those right in the middle of our neighborhoods are residential brothels. And in the suburbs, they're in the suburbs too, but also in the suburbs, the houses where once traffickers will really often try to get all their girls pregnant so that they have a child by each one of them. And they'll take one of them off the street, put them in a nice house out in the suburbs with the children. And they will have to earn money. This girl told us she had to earn $1,500 a week to be able to spend 30 minutes with her kid on the weekend.
Wow.
A lot of this stuff we're seeing around us, and we're just not paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was working at one of the group homes, and I came to work early, and I saw four people. They were beating up on this girl, and she was, I would say, 14 years old. And they beat her pretty bad. And because I was at work, I didn't go over there because I would have brought drama to, you know, to the shelter where I was working. And but I did call. But that was one of the first times that I witnessed something, and I didn't do anything. They beat the girl up. They dropped her. They dragged her back in. And, you know, and that was a sex trafficking incident where she didn't want to be with some people. And they were like, well, you don't have a choice. And, you know, I did call. And, you know, the lack of concern and consideration that some other people have that we're supposed to be helping us in these situations, police-wise, you know, it was just troubling to me. And so, I see those things, but I had to leave. I had to quit that job because, like I said, that was like one of the first times I witnessed something and didn't do anything. And that hurt me to the core inside.
Oh, yeah.
It hurt me to the core. I could hear her screaming, and then they picked her up, and then they dragged her. They dragged her, you know, in the house. And she couldn't, you know, she couldn't move on her own, and they picked her up, and then she just dropped her. You know, I mean, the viciousness and how they were beating her and everything. And so, I mean.
And so you can't make me believe somebody's doing that because they want to.
Exactly. And you know, so you know that for those were, like I said, tough situations I've been involved in. One of the things that I try and do, and I try to teach people, you know, some personal safety issues, because they, you know, when you say, and a lot of people don't want to believe this, and I remember in Minnesota, and because I did gangs and stuff for several years, you know, that was a specialty of mine. But, you know, when you talk about gorilla pimping and stuff and snatching mother and daughter, you know, from the parking lot, you know, at a grocery store and stuff, I mean, those things happen more than people want to believe.
Right.
And so it is something that, like I said, people don't take precautions for because they don't want to believe that it happens. Then they believe it happens to specific people.
Right.
You know, and so we – so like, you know – and nobody is immune from this sex trafficking. You know, it's just, I've just witnessed so much of this in my day and just training, and even currently now. So, but, you know, like you said, the increase with the pandemic and people doing what they're doing to try to survive, and like you said, you know, there's some underlying issues and stuff. They initially maybe started off doing this because, you know, and then there was some abuse involved, because I know when I, you know, look at the folder on some of these kids, you know, when you look at the history of abuse and stuff like that, so they got this these sexualized behaviors, you know, because they were dealt with inappropriately and stuff like that. So, and I guess I want to wonder, you said you deal with women, but, well, I guess you wouldn't, you know, and I'm just thinking about guys that take advantage of women, you know, like pedophiles and, you know, because they don't, I just don't think there's any recuperative powers in people like that. You know, they talk about this all the time, but, you know, I've never known one that, you know, where, you know, I had a case in Cudahy where this guy raped his two daughters, and he was put on medication. And all of a sudden insurance couldn't, you know, wouldn't take care of him, and this meant he ended up raping his daughters again. And so when you look at situations and you look at a lot of the technical issues that we run into, and, you know, like I said, the concern and consideration for some people versus other people, and we know that, you know, it's just a big umbrella of situations that are going on, and I'm so glad that you just brought to light so many different issues about what's been going on. Is there a website or something? You said you have a talk show, you know, where people can hear you.
Yeah, so our website is, of course, www.convergenceresource.org. So that's C as in cat, O as in Oscar, N as in Nancy, V as in Victor, E as in Edward, R as in Red, G as in George, E as in Edward, N as in Nancy, C as in cat, and E, convergence, and then the word resource, like resources but no S,
okay.
.org. And our website, you can go to our website. Actually, we have a training coming up September 11th on human trafficking and dissociative identity disorder.
Okay.
And this is something that people don't believe exists. But dissociative identity disorder is it's kind of like what we used to call multiple personality disorder. Most human trafficking victims disassociate. We disassociate daily. It goes all the way from daydreaming to actual altered personalities. But the problem that they have, especially when dealing with law enforcement, is if they have dissociative identity disorder, you know, law enforcement, you guys know what you do. You ask the same question over and over again because you're trying to verify and make sure the person's not lying. Well, if the person switches
right.
in front of you and you don't know they switched, you're going to get different answers, not because they're lying, but because their altered personality
right.
is not answering you. Okay? And they have a different memory of the situation. So that's a free training, September 11th. If they go to our website, they can register for it and come to it for free. And a person with lived experience of dissociative identity disorder will be one of the presenters. Also, the radio station is Joy 1340. I'm on that station on Mondays at 12:30. But it also the shows are on our website. So they're uploaded to the website. So if you miss them, you can hear them. We give a lot of information as well as cases that are going on, and I know that you probably saw on the news recently about OnlyFans. Did you see that? Where OnlyFans is taking down their erotic or adult entertainment portion of their site because they kept saying that they weren't selling sex, but it came out that people were being trafficked right through OnlyFans.
Wow.
This just happened last week. They just stopped them last week. And so we're part of an organization called the Coalition to End Sexual Exploitation. And they go after a lot of these big companies to stop them from doing things, because there's another one, this a lot of people buy stuff from them, and I can't think of the name of it right now because it's really inexpensive. It's overseas, but they're selling, if you can believe this now, they're selling dolls, babies, designed for you to be able to have sex with them.
Yes, yes. Yes, no, I've seen those. And a matter of fact, they're making them look pretty real. I mean, they do adults. They do,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, just the things that they're doing is just,
really. And so can I give the phone number to the center in case you, if someone has.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
If there's a person that needs our services, they can call us at 414-979-0591. That's 414-979-0591. They can schedule an intake appointment and get help. Or if they just want to talk to somebody and they're not really sure they want to come in for help, they can just call
uh-huh.
our helpline at 1-833-SSL-TALK. So it's 833-SSL-TALK. And we have operators that they can talk to. Or they can leave a message, and if they want somebody to call them back. But, again, we just want to reiterate, we help adult women that have been traumatized, adult women that may be coming out of the life of the commercial sex trade, or women that have just been released from incarceration, and we don't charge them anything. We do everything we can to help, and a lot of our women are doing pretty good. We've helped over 1,000 women out of our center, and we want to help more. And, you know, folks want to make a donation, we'll take that too.
Most definitely. And so if they make a donation, is there an email or for donation?
They go to our website. They can make a donation right there on the website. There's a button that says
okay.
donate. We've got several other ways they can do it. I forgot what they're all called, though, but they're on the website. Or they can
okay.
just mail it in or drop it off. At our address is 7961 North 76th Street, right there on 76th and Bradley. I want to thank you so much
oh, okay.
for the opportunity to share with your audience and to speak with you. It was really a great opportunity. Thank you so much. And thank you for caring. You know, it's very obvious
from
talking to you that you care about people and that we need more people that care about folks. And if you and your guys are interested in being involved in HEMAD, where men take a stand against human trafficking, we'd love to have you participate
okay.
in the program.
Yeah, I'm going to let them know about that tonight, because actually we were supposed to meet, and I was at church last week, and somebody in church, they said, had the Delta virus, and I was sitting in front of them. I mean, they were sitting in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and I'm waiting. I went and took my test today, and I should be getting results back. They said between 9 and midnight, so I'm just sitting back, relaxing, waiting until, you know, they say, give me the okay, you know, that I'm okay. Now, you said Joy 1340. Is that a.m.? Or
I think 1340 is, you know what, this is really bad that I don't know the call. I just know the call letters are there. The Milwaukee Radio Group is who is through. Let me see if I can get them some better information for you. But it is J-O-Y 1340. They have AM and FM station. But you can listen
okay.
to it through your computer as well. If you just hit Joy 1340, you can listen to it right through your computer.
And that's Monday?
It's Monday at 12:30. But because people usually ask him to repeat my shows, he may play it two
uh-huh.
or three times throughout the week. But, again, it is always
nice. –
yeah, we do have quite a few of the shows up on the website, and we'll be just replenishing and replenish them every year because the show's been on for a couple of years. But I can tell you that, people learn a lot on the show, and we try to make people aware when things are going on that they need to be aware of. So it's just it's a great opportunity to share, just as this opportunity has been to be able to share. We just want people to understand that human trafficking is real. It's out there. You need to protect
right,
not just
right.
your girls and your boys and men and women. You're not safe either. You know, we all need to be looking
right.
out for each other in this. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that because a lot of people don't think that, you know, boys are sex trafficked, you know, at the numbers that, you know, you have people that have all kinds of issues. And, you know, and this is they profile people. And, you know, little boys, big boys, this is what they do. And so, yeah, it's is very crazy out there, you know, with the things that people do. And there was, I don't know if you heard of, what was it called? Birds Island?
What is it?
Birds Island. I'm trying to think. Mike Epstein, the guy that was killed.
Oh, yeah, Epstein, yeah. Listen, I got those call
right.
letters for you. It's Joy 1340
okay.
AM and 98.7
okay.
FM. Now,
okay,
Epstein,
so...
you know, Epstein was a big-time trafficker. He was definitely
yeah.
trafficking people.
Yeah, it's called The Lost Boys of Bird Island.
Oh, no, I don't even know
what
that is. Is that a movie?
Oh, my goodness. They took that book out of the writing, out of publication, because it implicated one of the princes out of England, one of Charles's uncles or cousins. He was, you know, pedophiles. And the Lost Boys from Bird
don't
Island.
You gotta step
were,
up, baby.
They were people. I said they were people from out of Africa. You know,
oh,
so they
wow.
had 10, 12-year-old boys, and then they killed them.
What?
And a lot of the people, yeah, and then a lot of the people that were involved in the incident, like there's the people that wrote the book, they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Lost
Boys.
So
we have a big cover up, and like I said, that book was taken off the market, and
yes,
I'm trying to find somebody that has that book. But again, when you look at the sex trade industry, and you know, and this is what they did, you know,
wow.
and Joe Epstein and all these people, and I know a lot of people get irritated with me, but you know, those are Oprah and Gail's friends. You know,
oh.
they didn't have anything to
mm-hmm.
say about those guys. You know, they
mm-hmm.
hung out with those guys and so forth. Huh?
You said they were their friends?
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they, you know, there's pictures of them on the yachts and stuff with them. And my point is, you can't be around people for so long and not know that they have these issues.
Wow.
You know, these guys, they don't keep it a secret. I mean, if you're paying attention, you're going to see it. But a lot of people, you know, they can care less. You know.
Yeah. Well, you
and,
know, if it doesn't hit their
on,
household, like you have a lot of people about like that about human trafficking. If it doesn't hit their household, it's not important. But I can tell you,
right.
I could tell you, I could be rich with all the people who we tried to talk to about human trafficking, and they didn't believe it. That's not true. Those girls are just passive. When it hit their household, I was the first
right.
phone call they made. You know, we got a lot of that happening.
Right, right. And, you know, like I said, we've done so many incidents, and I've always been wondering when we would do sting operations, you know, how far are we going? You know, yeah, we arrest these people for sex trafficking, and then we get these underage people at these bars as dancers. And, you know, the way the law is, you know, it's like, well, this kid fooled them, and, you know, so they're not really responsible because, you know, they had a false ID and all this and that. But, you know, at some point, you know that this is a minor.
Right.
You know, and so people are just so blind to the fact of not knowing or acting like they don't know. But, I mean, it's just so obvious, you know. If you've been around for a long time and this is your job and this is what you do. That's always been troubling to me. Now, is there any closing statements that you would like to, you know, tell some people that, you know, that are – you know, they want to find help. They're intimidated to, you know, come forward for a number of reasons. I mean, you've listed them before, but, you know, is there a hotline? You know, you got other issues where people can, you know, get in touch with you? Or
And
well, I'm gonna.
You said you had a host of people.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I'm just gonna restate the number. 1-833 SSL Talk is our calling number. But for people that need help, and for these people, here's who I'm talking to. I'm talking to whether you're a young lady or a more mature lady, and you were in the life or are presently in the life, and you just want some help moving forward. We can help. Our number is 979-0591. It's 414-979-0591. Our reach is wide. We're not only local in Milwaukee, we're throughout Wisconsin. We're regional, we're national, and we're international. We have partners all over the world. And here's the thing. You don't have to do that alone. We know that change is hard. We know that you may have burnt bridges and doors have been closed in your face because you found yourself ending up back here over and over again and you don't know how you got back here. You don't need to quit. You don't need to give up. You just need to reach your hand out and we'll grab hold and we'll walk alongside you as you walk through this. So that's what I want to say to them. And I just want to let you know, I mean, after helping over 1,000 women, I think we know a little bit about what we do. So we'd love to make that 1,001 if you're somebody listening and want our help. So.
Yes, most definitely. Well, we thank you, Dr. Deborah Lassiter, for all that you do and things known and not known, because I'm sure that there's just so much that, we empty our pockets and our hearts in these situations, and we don't, we're not doing it for glorification. We're doing it because we want to help the people.
Right.
And so I appreciate, the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to, it slipped my mind, but, thank you. Sister Dee Dee, Sister Dee Dee Conley. She said, okay, she knows you. And so I'm glad that she usually does our ancestral profile a lot of times. So I'm going to get her on here to do the ancestral profile. So she's with the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And and I'm probably there.
Could I just thank the people that are responsible for me being on, being here with you tonight? Big thank you to Benito and Shirley Leatherwood Garrett through their church.
Yes.
They're the ones who got us together. So just want to say a big thank you to them. And you guys may know them from Mahogany Soul, as they do sing a lot of places throughout the city.
Yes. Well, I didn't know they, I know because I go to Cedar Hills every now and then. And so I would bump into them there. And I don't know if you know Steve Hibbler that passed away recently.
Oh, the pastor that passed away. I didn't know him personally, but I know that Benito and Shirley do.
Right. And I had talked to Pastor Janine, his wife, and then she was like, oh, Benita. And then they know somebody, and I was like, oh, awesome. So, again, I am happy that, you made the time to come out here and share this information, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people. You can always go back and, listen to the show. You can call in the number and, 516-418-5674. And just look up the show, and it's called The Problem of Sex Trafficking in 2021. And again, I just want to thank you for what you do, known and unknown, because I know you're doing so much. And you're probably getting phone calls 24/7, and I hope, you're compensated with some rest, because I know that you need it. Because the workload is just endless. So, again, thank you. And then your show Monday, it comes on at, you said 12:30?
12:30, yes.
Okay, and that's Joy 1340 a.m. Okay.
Right.
All right. Well, again, we thank you for being here. And we're going to just close out and we got to do this again. We have to revisit this. And I was going to ask a question.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I know you, as far as boys, do you have, you know, you talked about the men's, the He-Man group. Do they work with young boys?
Well, actually, what He-Man does is He-Man, they don't actually provide any services. He-Man actually is a campaign where we ask men to take a stand against human trafficking. But what we do know is that that is a big deficit, because on our call center, we get calls from men from other states because they can't find help, because the first thing is trying to convince people that as a man, you got trafficked. You know, that's the first part. They don't believe them. And then boys, you know, they believe, you know, it's always this, well, oh, if they got trafficked, they must be a homosexual or gay. No, that is not what's happening. You know, yes, some people from the LGBTQI community do get trafficked, but straight men get trafficked as well, and boys as well, and in the labor trade and the sex trade,
Wow.
We don't know if that help them right now, but that's a big deficit right there.
Wow. Well, that is something in itself. Like I said, we have to revisit these conversations some more. I know there's going to be some questions. So for those of you that that may listen to the show and you want to forward some questions, you can email us at warriorsway101@gmail.com, warriorsway101@gmail.com. For questions, comments that you may not have got a chance to ask our great Dr. Deborah Lassiter. So, again, I want to thank you, and we will just close it out.
All right. Give me a call if you need.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I will be calling you again, most definitely.
Okay.
Most definitely.
When the glory comes, it will be out, it will be out. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh,
glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be out. It will be out. Oh, Lord.
Man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory, the coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory.
One day,